The following content is intended for people who are blind or Brit-impaired.
Engage.
You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm Chris Skidmore, and this is Tech Tips. Coming up this month on Tech Tips, we're not going to be talking so much about assistive technology as we are about how you can protect your personal information when you're both online and out in public. My guest this month is Rivka, a cybersecurity specialist. That's what's coming up this month on Tech Tips. October is World Blindness Awareness Month, where both the challenges and the achievements of people within the visually impaired community are highlighted and celebrated. October is also Cybersecurity Month, and protecting your personal information both online and in public is what we will be talking about today. My guest today is Rivka. She has 26 years of experience working within the information technology field, and the last 16 of that focused on cybersecurity. Hi, Rivka. Welcome to Tech Tips.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
We're going to be talking about all the various ways that you can protect yourself, whether you are online or out in public. Before we do that, though, I would like to find out a little bit about you. Who is Rivka?
Well, as you said, I've been doing cybersecurity for about 16 years. And one of the things I noticed was that too many people are handed technology when they're most vulnerable, such as when they're applying for government benefits or to help with a disability, and none of them are really taught how to protect their information and prevent themselves from becoming victims. So our company, Level Up Access Group, educates the vulnerable individuals on how and why to protect themselves in the digital world. In addition, we explore technology and experiences for the visually impaired community.
And why is it important for people to keep track of their personal information and who has access to it?
So if you go back before we had cell phones, the data marketing field was very much people would ask for your information or track you through questionnaires and fields and try to target their advertising. Now, data marketing is a huge business. Everything from insurance agents, stores in your town, websites, they all want to know and use the information about where you go, what you do, what items interest you in an effort to sell their goods. This is why you have advertisements that are related to an item you just looked up or shopped for recently on your phone. And bad actors can use this information to target you and your loved ones into becoming a victim.
Ouch. And that's probably why when somebody in my house starts talking about vacuums or a specific type of car, I start getting ads on my Facebook.
It is exactly why that happens. So one of the things that occurs is that if you go out and like you said, and looks up vacuums because your wife wants the brand new Dyson, all of a sudden Dyson starts popping up in your feed. There's a joke in cybersecurity professionals that the best way to get someone to, your significant other to know what you want for your birthday is to go over to their phone and say exactly what it is about 5 to 10 times. And all of a sudden they'll start seeing it in their advertisements.
That's awesome. I need to remember that. Passwords are the first line of defense when protecting our online accounts. What is the key to a strong password, and what are some things people should and shouldn't do when creating and using their passwords?
Strong passwords are random, they're long, and they're complex. Yet, they're easy for you to remember. If it's short because you remember your dog and the year it is, anybody can guess that by knowing just a little bit of information about you. If you're using your street address or you're using your birth date, those are very simple things to guess. It takes about 3 hours to crack an 8-character password. That's a word, some numbers, uppercase, lowercase, and any type of symbols. If you bump up to a 16-character password, we're still years away from being able to crack that in the same amount of time. To protect yourselves, I would say use words that go together, but, you know, throw in an uppercase and a lowercase and a number. One of the things I like to do is I'll pick up phrases that I like to tell myself, like the sky is blue, 1983, or I really love my church. Even things as simple as your dog, what you're cooking for dinner, anything can happen. Even song lyrics, though we want you to stay away from song lyrics just because everybody can use them. And a lot of the attacks use predetermined words. And so they go through something called a dictionary attack where they just start applying words, common words, and they can start cracking passwords that way. So something that means something to you, something that maybe a goal you have, all those things work, and try to get it as complex as you can. Now, it's really, really important. I cannot emphasize this enough. Don't use that password anywhere else. And so all of a sudden you think to yourself, oh my gosh, I can't remember 20 passwords, let alone 50, just to get my phone to do the thing I want it to do. That's where tools like a password keeper can come into play. You don't have to remember all of those passwords. A password keeper is an application that you use on your phone or on your computer where you use maybe biometrics, or you use a password you do know to get access to it. And then you can generate random passwords for all of your websites. And that way you're not trying to remember, oh, was CVS the beginning or the end of the password, or what happened when I went to Walmart yesterday, or the grocery store, or whatever. Like, you don't have to remember all of those passwords. A good password keeper can help you with that.
And can you give us some examples of a good password keeper?
Bitwarden is a good one and does have free stuff for it. When you start expanding to more features, a lot of these tools do cost money, but they're very low cost. But LastPass is one. Even Google has one, but you want to be careful of things on your iPhone and things in your Android that are saying they're saving your password. That may not be a password keeper in itself.
And one of the other things I want to go back to just real quick that I think you touched on is that when you're using a word, and I'm going to use the word sweet, you want to change up those letters. You want to use maybe capital letters, and instead of an E, use the number 3. Switch it up and do stuff like that, correct?
Yes, you definitely want to use symbols. It's not a criteria to change every part of every word. But if you're doing sweet and you start with a dollar sign and then continue, if it's not part of a bigger phrase that you're using, it may be very easy for bad actors to use at this point.
Let's take all this information and use it in a practical situation. Most of us are on social media at some point or another, posting about things going on in our lives. And how can we better protect our information when we're using Facebook, Instagram, X, or any of the other social platforms?
One of the number one things to do is lock down your privacy settings. You need to be aware of who has access to see your posts and your photos. If you do something like allow friends of friends, you can be targeted because you don't know the extent of that audience. You don't know if someone had a nefarious person join their friend group, and now all of a sudden, all of your social media posts are accessible to them. Don't post your plans until after they happen. Telling the world you're going on a cruise is very exciting. And I know a lot of us want to talk about it and we want to share it with our friends and relatives, but it also sets you up to have your home broken into, as they know now you're not going to be there.
Always post it past tense is a good rule of thumb.
Always post it past tense. If you're, you know, trying to invite people to do something, use the Facebook Messenger, for example, or use direct messaging or texting or email to let people know of an event where you're inviting them. Also, as you're going through and trying to make sure things are good, check out those security settings. There are some great settings in there that where you can clean up all of your past posts. So let's say you learn today to lock up your privacy settings, what do you do about every post you've ever put? You know, now people can learn a lot about you and they're trying to guess your password, right? They're looking at your dog and saying, my dog's name is Tabitha. And so now I'm going to use Tabitha and everything. Social media accounts will allow you to archive old posts. They will allow you to delete old information and they'll allow you to reset the settings so that only you can see your past posts or only your friends can see your past posts.
And a question that literally just popped into my head. Let's say I've been on Facebook for, you know, 10, 15 years and my privacy settings were wrong and anybody and everybody could see my post from day one. If I go in today and change the privacy settings now, is that retroactive?
They have a setting in the example of Facebook. They do have a setting that says, and on all my past posts. It is a separate setting. So it can either be just today forward, or it could be and everything in the past.
You're listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service. We are talking with Rivka today about cybersecurity and better protecting yourself and keeping our phones and online accounts are secure, but that's just one piece of the puzzle. These days, things like smart home automation has been hailed, especially in the visually impaired community, as something that can make our lives easier. The truth is, it's also another way for your information to be vulnerable. For example, does your washing machine, your dryer, your fridge really need access to the internet? You know, my question to you is, what can we do to secure these smart appliances in our homes?
The first thing I would tell you to do is lock down your home router. That is the device that your internet provider gave you to connect Wi-Fi in your home and out to the internet. If you can't do it yourself, you're not comfortable doing that, get a trusted friend to help you lock it down. Absolutely, only allow devices that you need to connect to connect. If you were to say what's the most important thing about internet at home, lock down that firewall or router and let's make sure that people can't get access that don't need it. Accessibility is very important and smart devices give you all those accommodations in your hand. For example, a lot of those devices allow internet access or require internet access just to work. I know we have a TV that if you turn off internet access, the accessibility settings go away. And that is not appropriate. In the past, we had phones that would use accessibility settings and they were excellent and they did not need internet access. So we do understand the pain of those things. Unfortunately, you are going to have to decide what the right level balancing these things are. So if your washer and dryer tell your phone the load is finished, delete, but you don't use any other settings or do things, is that really something that you have to have for accessibility? Or is it a convenience that you could do without? You have to decide whether or not it's a convenience or a necessity, and you have to decide what the risks are for those. For example, if somebody is going through the internet to find your washer and dryer, they can program it to do different things, such as use more water, use more electricity, beep at you when you're not expecting it, turn on and off features. And one of the biggest things is that most vendors and manufacturers stop updating any security updates after 2 years of creating the device. That means that washing machine notification becomes a much higher risk after 2 years. And I don't think we all want to replace our washing machine every 2 years.
I second that emotion. Keeping our devices secure is just the first step, but we can also make ourselves vulnerable when we're out in public. And what are some ways we can protect ourselves during a, quote, night out on the town?
People everywhere are listening to us. People are watching. Even our phones reach out to see what's around us. Many businesses have Wi-Fi as a courtesy, but do you have to use it? We are very attached to our phones, whether it be for accessibility purposes or whether it is for, I just want to look at social media because I'm a little bored or I need to be entertained while I'm out. In those cases, your phone is scanning automatically every Wi-Fi connection in your area. So say you are standing on Main Street, you actually can see all the Wi-Fi connections up and down the street within range, and your phone is going and saying, hey, who are you? And the Wi-Fi connection is answering. That's also giving a piece of your phone and your data to all of those different Wi-Fi connections. There are nefarious people out there who will sit there and set up a bad Wi-Fi connection. And their whole purpose is they might give you internet, but more likely they want you to connect so that they can put malware on your device. So I would tell people, if you are out and about, turn off your Wi-Fi. Go ahead, use your cell phone data so that you can have your accessibility settings. If that means you're using more data, stay off of social media. Don't go scrolling on your phone while you're out to kind of save your data settings a little bit. But stay away from other people's Wi-Fis and turn off the ability of scanning for Wi-Fi. When you think about Bluetooth settings, a lot of people have Bluetooth headphones. If you're not using Bluetooth, you still use a corded earbud or whatever it is, go ahead and turn off Bluetooth. Turn off settings you're not using so that people can't connect, they can't see your phone. Even more important is use your headphones.
Yes.
Getting into a private room when you are looking up something on your phone, having your headphones, if you have to speak in public to answer questions, if you're on your phone, step into a private room. If you have to speak or give information on your phone, step into a private room or ask to call them back. There are very few situations out there that you have to immediately give your name, your birth date, your social security number, your credit card numbers.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the example I like to give is being at a boarding gate one time waiting to get on an airplane. And while I wasn't trying to listen to this woman three aisles over, I could have recorded all her credit card information. And the running joke was literally could have put the trip on her credit card because she was being so loud while trying to pay her light bill. And it also brings up another memory. When you call somebody, make sure you've called the right place before you give them your personal information.
And 100%.
I say that because I used to work at a radio station where our 1-800 number was one digit different than the Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas. And we were always getting calls from people wanting to make reservations. And they didn't hear us identify the radio station. When we answered the phone, we said, hi, 98.7 The Point. And I'd like to make a reservation, please. And we're not a hotel. Well, that's the number I called. Well, you weren't paying attention to what I said. I'm sorry. So pay attention to the number that you dialed and the person that answers the phone. Make sure it is the place you were intending to call. We all make mistakes, and it's going to happen.
In that, make sure that when you look up a phone online, so if you're talking to your phone and you're like, hey, Siri, tell me the number for my favorite pizza place. She may or may not read it to you, and that is very helpful. But if you're not giving her all the information, you may be getting a different number. Our pizza place in town has a similar name with two locations, and very often we get the wrong one. But if you're looking online and you're using your screen reader online, if you're searching in your search engine, make sure you are not using the very first number that pops up. Most of those, and you will see that they are sponsored. Even bad actors can pay to have their number sponsored and put it up. Anybody can buy that advertising. That's all it is. If you need to call your bank, absolutely 100% use the number on the back of your credit card.
Or debit card, whatever card you've got.
Use the printed, published number.
You know, along those same lines, use the number that's on your statement.
Because
that's going to be the right number too. And that also goes for calling a customer service line for a company. Let's say you want to call an airline to change a reservation or to make a reservation. At one time, when you were doing Google searches, it was very possible that you would get a fake number. And when you called it, you weren't actually talking to the airline. You were talking to a bad actor. So always keep that in mind. One of the things, and we've all heard about, even if we haven't used the Be My Eyes app, one of the things I love about that app is that they now have a dedicated section for customer service lines and technical support lines for major companies and corporations that have been geared specifically for people with visual impairments. I've used the one for American Airlines, and it was a fabulous experience. Remember, you've got that option too. You're listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service. We're talking with Rivka this month about cybersecurity, and we've all been in a store, maybe a festival, or even just surfing the web, and get hit with free offers. Usually, though, these free offers are not actually free. I know you have a saying, and the saying is, if it's free, you're the product. So what exactly do you mean by that?
Remember earlier we talked about data marketing?
Mm-hmm.
There are people everywhere who ask you for your home address, your name, your birth date, your phone number, even your social security number. Now, this can be used for good, like you're entering a drawing or a raffle for your church. But most of the time, you're consenting to have your information shared and sold to others. You don't know their intentions. Have you ever noticed that when you move to a new place, all of a sudden you get mail that's like, hey, welcome to the neighborhood. We're your local insurance agent. Hey, welcome to the neighborhood. Do you need windows or doors or painting?
Hey, hang on a second. I've got one for you. Whenever we move, I start getting emails about update your voter registration information, and it looks totally legit. All of a sudden, I am getting those ads that you're talking about. Hey, do you need a mover? Do you need the windows replaced? Do you need the roof replaced? And it comes right back to that form that I thought I was filling out that was legit is not. It's just data marketing.
Right. The best way to change your voter registration, or excuse me, not best, but simplest way, is when you change we live in North Carolina. And in North Carolina, when you change your North Carolina identification card or driver's license, depending who's doing it, you have the option right then and there to change your voter registration. That is simple, easy, and effective. But if you ever do need to change your voter registration, please just call the Board of Elections and find out their particular process for your locality.
Definitely the best way to do it. I'm going to switch gears here just a little bit and talk about, you know, the biggest catchphrase of the decade, which is AI or artificial intelligence. While AI has been a big boost in achieving independent living within the visually impaired community, it's also been harder to spot scams written and generated using AI. My first question is, what is AI? And it's, you know, very simple. You know, we don't have to get too deep into the weeds on this. What is AI? And then second, what are some of the ways that AI-generated content can be spotted?
AI-generated content can be quite beneficial. I will be the first person to say, I know that we are making leaps and bounds in this space. When people are talking about AI and we have Gemini on Android phones and we have ChatGPT and other pieces out there, you can ask questions and have it go out and parse all of this data in the world and bring you back an answer. This is different than a search engine. If you're saying, hey, I would like dinner tonight using chicken, bacon, and ranch dressing, it can go out, get you a recipe, help you put it together. It didn't go through search engines to find a recipe. It's actually putting together where it went to a whole bunch of places, and it's generating possibly a new recipe for you. Now, that's really helpful. But on the other side, if you're giving information in your questions, such as your name, your birth date, your address, even your social security number. You have to realize that you're loading all that personal information. That is loading it into the database. And now people can pull your information straight out of it. Now, the good news is you can get your information deleted. They have built-in methods to do that. But you may need help of a trusted friend.
With that being said, what should people look for when they are trying to spot AI-generated scams?
Well, one example of a good AI-generated impersonation is of Tom Cruise. The audio and video at first look of a younger Cruise, and he's washing his hands and using industrial cleaner. If you were to watch the video and audio together, they slide in and out of synchronization. The video around his mouth and hands will go in and out of focus, and the audio repeats itself with several words and sounds, and the inflection and speech rate are just a little bit off. The important thing to remember is context. Is the video or audio verifiable through a news or fact-checking website? Does the information provided require me to act quickly? Does it require me to purchase gift cards or promise me something in return for an action? The government and law enforcement will never ask you for payment by text, call, or using your gift cards.
Good to know. And it still needs to be said because people are still falling for these scams. With everything that we've talked about today, are there resources available where someone can learn more about improving their own security?
Absolutely. Your local library, many libraries offer free classes and help you with your mobile phone. In some of the western counties in North Carolina, there are weekly classes teaching you how to use your phone, how to check the settings, and make sure that you are as secure as possible. Also, two websites that I use a lot, Snopes.com and FactCheck.org. are both very useful to clarify information that we're seeing in news and social media. And third, the most important is having a trusted confidant. It's important for everybody to be able to ask for help in a safe place and advice of using devices or about your calls, cell phones, and texts.
Good to know. And with everything that we've covered, what do you want people to take away from this conversation?
Top three things. Number one, lock your phone with a strong password. It can't be said enough that if you drop your phone and you're not using any type of phone lock, everybody now has all the information on your phone. Use privacy settings in the most secure mode possible on your smart devices. And then number three, be aware of your surroundings. Use headphones, call people back when you're in a more private setting.
Awesome. Thank you. And with that, I am going to thank you for your time. It was greatly appreciated.
Thank you. I really appreciated it.
Several websites were mentioned today during our conversation about cybersecurity and protecting your personal information. The first one is Snopes.com, and then there was FactCheck.org. And finally, the website that she mentioned is LevelUpAccessGroup.com. If you would like to reach out for more information, you can contact Rivka at info@levelupaccessgroup.com. I would like to thank her once again for her time. It was greatly appreciated. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Tech Tips. I hope you've enjoyed it. If there's something you'd like covered in a future episode, send an email to techtipspodcast@gmail.com. I'm Chris Skidmore for the North Carolina Reading Service. Tech Tips is available online by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have questions or comments about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org or give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service.